If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Before we get into Tooncast episode 78, Rocky and Bullwinkle, we have something left over from episode 77. The Great Scrappy Debate. Now,
that's a good name for it.
I tried to get one over on everybody by making a post of the official Geekcast Radio Network opinion of Scrappy Doo. And of course, because it's my opinion, it you know, what I say goes.
Until I bounce it off.
Yeah. But anyway,
that's a satanic and blasphemous use of Geekcast Radio's name.
Exactly.
That's bullshit right there. But anyway, after episode 77, we constantly had the argument of whether Scrappy rules, which is my opinion, or Scrappy sucks, which is pretty much everybody else's opinion, which all suck. Your opinions are wrong. And I don't care what Kevin says. Opinions can be wrong.
Well, let's make a big comparison here. I see Glade said no to Scrappy. Kevin said no to Scrappy. I said no to Scrappy. And Mike Birdman Dodd said no to Scrappy.
And
that leaves only you.
And three other people that have voted over on my poll so far have also said no.
Shoot, it might have been them.
This is such a big debate that we had to get all three of us together to hash it out. And you guys are not privy unless you go over to the Geekcast Radio network website that Mike and I went back and forth for I don't know how many comments we had. At least 10 or 12 comments back and forth on the Scrappy page.
Yeah.
And then Birdman jumped in on it too.
Yeah, he jumped in on your post, but, you know, it's one of those things where, honestly, I'm done with it now. I have my opinion, they have their opinion, we're recording this to pretty much end the debate, and I still say Scrappy rules. There are good points to his character, and yes, I will not really concede, but I will agree that there are also annoying points. However, I think that the good points outweigh the bad points.
My highlight of this entire argument was when you mentioned that the reason for those that don't know, Mike and I got in a debate of Copper Kid versus Scrappy Doo. My favorite part of the debate was when Mike said the reason Scrappy Doo is better than Copper Kid was because he's a puppy and he's cute and not a big metal thing. This coming from the diehard Transformers fan. I loved that.
Everyone, for those of you people that are listening out there in podcast land, and those of you who have been Tooncast faithful.
Is that next to TV land?
No.
Okay.
For those of you who have been Tooncast faithfuls since episode 0, well, actually episode 1, you know, Kevin and I have gone back and forth about the whole Thundercats versus Silverhawks. And the whole thing is,
Which is funny because we both like both shows.
And see, that's the thing. But see, I think, in my own opinion, Thundercats is infinitely better because I remember it more. Yes, I do remember Silverhawks. Yes, I had Silverhawks toys when I was a kid. But I'm sorry. There is no way a puppy, no matter how annoying the character could be, is cuter than fucking... There's no way that Copper Kid is cuter than a fucking puppy. I'm sorry. There's just no way.
I wasn't saying he was cuter. I was saying they have the same character traits. No. So if you should dislike one, you should dislike both of them.
At least Scrappy can actually talk.
It dead of geek, something like that.
Although, I wish Scrappy wouldn't have been able to talk.
I don't know. I like both of the incarnations. Both Lenny Wineribs and Don Messick did a good job with Scrappy. So
yeah, I like them both. I like them both better than Scott Innes or however you say his last name. But they're all pretty similar. They all have the little puppy power thing. Which, by the way, if I have to hear that again in the next 10 years, my head's gonna blow up.
Well, at least they did justice and they arrested him in the live action movie.
That's true, and to prove how much of a crappy character he is, they resorted in the live action movie to him saying whatever he said, talking about ghosts and saying puppy power, and then peeing on Daphne.
You know what? Honestly, seriously, when I say Scrappy rules, I'm talking about the cartoon version of Scrappy. I could give a shit less about the movie version. The movie version sucks. I will agree to that, but the cartoon versions are awesome.
I guess to me, it's if I have my choice. Now, I completely agree with you as to why they had him on there, and as far as, you know, what his character brought to the show. But the problem I have with it is that they used him to replace the human characters, and I liked the human characters that they took off the show in order to get Scrappy in there. That's my big problem.
Now, hold on a second, because ever since we've had this debate, I've gone back and I've done research on this, not specifically Scrappy himself, but the whole thing of replacing the characters. There are episodes of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Or Scooby and Scrappy or whatever, where all five kids, or all four kids, or however many fucking kids there are there with Scooby and Scrappy. There are episodes where...
That was very rare, though.
Right, but I'm just saying, it's not that, yes, they did, you know, bring Scrappy in and Scooby Dumb and Scooby D and whoever other fucking Scooby relatives, girlfriends, incest, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Scrubby Doo.
you know, they did bring other relatives in, but I remember specifically at least maybe five episodes where Fred, Daphne, Velma, Shaggy, and Scooby were there with Scrappy.
Well, usually what they did, because right after they did it and they just took everybody off and it was just Shaggy, Scooby, and Scrappy.
Right.
They realized that didn't work. So one series they brought Velma back and it was the four of them. And then later on, much later on, they brought took Velma off again and brought Daphne back.
Yeah. They didn't like Fred.
No, Fred got screwed.
he was too busy sleeping with the other woman that wasn't on the show.
Yeah, they had to get Fred off because he was trying to sleep with all the girls.
And then he got drunk one night, and Shaggy and Scooby were in there, and instead of them, he ended up getting Scrappy.
Yeah, and there was drugs involved.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, getting back on point here.
As Birdman Dodd says, fuck Scrappy-Doo, I hope he dies. I hope he goddamn dies. End rant.
See, I enjoyed the fact that for 14 years we didn't have any Scrappy, and then they decided to bring him back in the live action, and that just made me hate him even more.
But you know, they did him justice by ruining him some more.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, and I'm going to have to ask Mr. Derek J. Wyatt about this, and I'm sure he'll probably...
If you get him to bring Scrappy on Mystery Inc., I will kill you.
Hold on, wait a second here. Wait a minute. I'm going to ask him if they are going to bring Scrappy in.
Ask him his opinion on Scrappy.
I will, but I'm going to ask him either way.
And honestly tell us his response.
Right. Well, it'll be on Twitter, so... but... The problem with bringing Scrappy in now, like, I've watched several episodes of Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated.
Mm-hmm, so have I.
Frank Welker is back as Fred.
Right.
The chick that originally played Daphne for...
Gray Delisle.
Huh?
Gray Delisle is...
is Daphne in the... Okay.
We're talking about Mystery Inc. I'm thinking about the movies. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Mystery Inc., it's Heather North...
Right.
Yeah. Whatever her name was. Huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. I'm double-checking just to make sure so we don't give any false information out here.
Yeah. And then...
No, it's Gray Delisle and Mindy Cohn.
Oh, okay. For Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then, of course, you know, Matthew Lillard is Shaggy and...
Yeah. Matthew Lillard is Shaggy and Frank Welker is Scooby.
And Fred, yeah.
Well, we already said
Fred. Yeah.
But my thing is, if they were to bring in Scrappy, I don't know anybody, unless it's Frank Welker that does it, I don't know anybody that can, and see, I don't know anybody that can mimic wine rib or messick, because the only way that I would want scrappy in SDMI is if it was a mimic of wine rib or messick's voices of them.
SDMI, that sounds like something you get when Shaggy, Scrappy, and Scooby get together.
No.
It's what they raid from the fridge.
No. Now, hold on. That's what I started calling it that after I saw Derek calling it that. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I just like it when it's the whole gang. That's why I like the movies that they put out. That's why I like Mystery Inc. It's the whole gang, and that's what I want to see.
I think the only thing, and we're kind of getting off the whole Scrappy debate here, but I think the only thing I don't like about Mystery Inc. so far, or Mystery Incorporated, the new series, is that Shaggy and Velma are a couple. It's just weird to me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, the whole point of Scooby-Doo cartoons is that Shaggy and Scooby are a buddy. You could put them in a buddy cop film and they would do excellent. You know, I mean, I don't know, whatever. So anyway, Tooncast official opinion is Scrappy rules, and the debate will continue.
No.
But the Geekcast radio opinion is that he sucks.
It's split, so.
And the Telecast opinion is that he sucks, and the BTVA opinion is that he sucks.
And the Stephen C. Phillips Media Corporation says he sucks.
Media Corporation?
Yes. So gracefully, Mike will.
My YouTube channel says it.
Gracefully, Mike will concede that he loses this debate.
Oh, no. Tooncast is my show, goddammit, and Scrappy rules. Now on to episode 78.
This is The Brain, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Yes!
Welcome to the 78th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG and Mike, and I am joined once again by Kevin Optimus Solo Thompson. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Today we are going to be taking a look at the classic Rocky and Bullwinkle show.
Yay! Who said that?
That's funny. So what have you been up to?
Oh, geez. I've been not working on my house or outside my house anymore because it's too windy and too cold to do any of that. And I'm finally done with all that stuff, so that's kind of nice. So, yeah, I've just been adding all kinds of Disney movies over at Behind the Voice Actors. I've added, good lord, a lot of movies lately. I added Bambi and Dumbo and Peter Pan and Pinocchio and Fox and the Hound and probably a couple other ones I'm forgetting. So I'm trying to get every single Disney movie onto the site, at least the ones I care about. Through Snow White, through Aladdin or Lion King is where I'm going. After that, I don't care.
You care about someone Snow else. White? Why the?
No, I mean from that era, from that date until Aladdin or Lion King. Those are the Disney movies I'm adding. I don't care about any of the Disney movies that came out after that.
Okay.
Someone else can do the current Disney movies because I didn't watch them or I'm not a fan of them. My Disney viewing stopped at Lion King.
Really? Wasn't there some good ones at some point?
I'm sure there was, but I just stopped watching after Lion King. I never watched any of the Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules.
Oh, see, Pocahontas was good.
I know. I'm just saying. I stopped when my last four were Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and Lion King.
Yeah. Pocahontas was good. What was the other one you mentioned? Not Hunchback. The other one.
Mulan and Hercules.
Yeah, Mulan and Hercules. Those were both good.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about the sequels to Pocahontas and Mulan, because I've never seen them, but the originals were good.
Okay.
let's see. I have just been podcasting my ass off this week more than usual, because over on Movie Weekend Review, we had a Halloween weekend blowout for episodes. We released 5 episodes in 1 weekend.
In other words, listeners, he is a slacker.
No, I'm a slacker. Ah.
Or one of you is a slacker.
Oh, no. Oh, no. And, you know, I had mentioned why that we had done that, and it is kind of my fault. And it really isn't the fact that I was slacking, it's the fact that I didn't have money to get movies, so...
Well, it makes more sense.
Yeah. No. I'm not like you people over at BBTA that don't update stuff when it was supposed to be updated. Or add voice clips to the Rocky and Bullwinkle page.
No, it's not that we're slackers, it's that there's not enough of us. You will be interested that we just received a message on our forums. I don't know if you saw it from – the only reason I bring it up because I know you're a big Charlie Brown fan. But we received a message from one of the original voice actors from the Peanuts specials. And she was offering to provide us pictures of her and her 2 siblings that were also on the Peanuts specials. And she was making a lot of good comments about the site and how much she liked it. But that was kind of weird because that was way back in the day. Like, she was she played Peppermint Patty before it was Peppermint Patty, when it was just Patty.
Oh.
So that was kind of cool. So hearing from real voice actors is always good. And especially someone older like that where it's hard to find pictures of them.
Yeah. So I guess we can go ahead and get into the history lesson today.
If we must. No, the Rocky and Bullwinkle show is the collective name actually for 2 American television animated cartoon series. The first one was titled Rocky and His Friends, which aired from 1959 to 1961. And the second one was actually called The Bullwinkle Show from 1961 to 1964. So you put those together and that's where you get the title The Rocky and Bullwinkle Show. They were pretty popular during the 60s. They were targeted towards children and actually adults. The zany characters and absurd plots would draw in children, while the clever usage of puns and topical references appealed to the adult demographic. Strengths helped it to overcome the fact that it had very choppy and limited animation. In fact, some critics have actually called the Rocky and Bullwinkle show kind of like a well-written radio program with pictures. So that's where the Rocky and Bullwinkle originated. Do you remember actually watching any of these as a kid, or was this something more you watched as you grew up, or what do you remember about these shorts?
I remember watching them as a kid. It's kind of funny because Rocky and Bullwinkle, Pink Panther, and surprisingly enough, Tom and Jerry, for me, they all kind of run together. Like at some point in my childhood, I watched all 3 of those. Right around this, like, either right after another or, like, within the same, like, 4 or 5 hour span of each other, you know, on any given day.
Yeah, I just remember watching them kind of like you said, like, to me, they were kind of like some of the other ones we've talked about, like Woody Woodpecker, you said Tom and Jerry, even Looney Tunes for me, even though I saw more Looney Tunes on a more frequent basis. This was something that you just kind of caught in between things or, I mean... We've said this a couple times. This is not one of the shows where you were actually, like, searching it out. It's not one of the shows where you, like, knew exactly what time it was on and you, like, made sure you were there. But you did catch it as you were flipping through. At least for me.
Oh, yeah. See me, it's kind of the other way around. I kind of – it's not that I didn't enjoy watching it, but I kind of had to watch it because my mom loved it. Oh, so okay. It's one of those things where whenever it came on, it was always on.
Yeah. And it, you know, it definitely was kind of iconic to me as, I mean, it's one of those ones where, whereas some of the Hanna-Barbera stuff, I didn't realize how old it was at the time. Mm-hmm. This and Woody Woodpecker, and there's one more that I'm not thinking of right now. Popeye, for example. Those 3, I knew they were old. Like, there's no getting around it just because of the animation and the kind of the design style and whatnot. You know they're old. So it wasn't like it was sneaking by me and I thought it was like a current cartoon. But at the same time, it wasn't so old where I couldn't understand it as a kid.
Right. Right, yeah. It's one of those classic cartoons, and it's one of those things where it's another one of these cartoons that had multiple other shorts within it. So it's not just The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, or, you know, whatever you want to call the show. It's not just that cast. It's, you know, Aesop and Son, Fractured Fairy Tales.
Right. Lots of other ones. Oh. Yeah, it's like a lot of the stuff that was on back in the day where you had a lot of different pieces making up the entire show, because they weren't the types of... It just wasn't commonplace back then to actually make a show that had a 30-minute story. They didn't believe people were going to, you know, pay attention for that long. So you'll see a lot of them that were, you know, 8 minutes, 7 minutes. And in here, there's a lot that are, like, real short. Like, you had shorts that were, like, 2 minutes, a minute and a half, 5 minutes, I think, were some of the longer ones.
Yep. Yeah, but I mean, overall, very, very awesome cartoon, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree with that. It's much better than some of the other stuff that we've covered from that time period.
Such as, you care to elaborate on that?
Well, just the ones I've mentioned. I would rather watch Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm not saying these other ones are bad, but I would rather watch Rocky and Bullwinkle than... Woody Woodpecker, rather than Popeye, and rather than like Pink Panther. To me.
For me, I wouldn't count Woody Woodpecker and Pink Panther in that, because, you know, that's putting them in with a, you know, potentially rapist type character. So
I'm just saying, I would rather watch this than any of those.
Yeah. I don't know.
This to me, if you were trying to compare this to like an 80s cartoon, to me, the only one that you can compare it with is, like, Danger Mouse. I don't know exactly why, but that's, to me, it feels like the same type of cartoon. Now, I know Danger Mouse had a lot of British overtones and whatnot, but as far as, like, bringing in, like, the references to real-life stuff and just the type of comedy it was, it reminds me of kind of Danger Mouse or something of that vein.
Right, yeah. I agree a little bit.
I mean, there's really nothing in the 80s that quite compares to it, because it's kind of its own unique thing. But to me, that's kind of the only thing I can think right off the top of my head that comes kind of close.
Right, yeah, that's very true. So I guess we can get into the voice actors or the characters here.
Yeah, in case you're completely an imbecile, the lead characters of the show are Rocky and Bullwinkle. Rocky is a flying squirrel, and Bullwinkle is a moose. So, in case that wasn't painfully obvious to everybody listening, and they lived in the fictional town of Frostbite Falls, Minnesota, which was based on the real-life city of International Falls, Minnesota, wherever that is. I've never been there. And, of course, the main villains in the Rocky and Bullwinkle parts are Boris and Natasha.
Boris, Natasha, and Fearless Leader.
Oh, yeah, and Fearless Leader. I always think of Boris and Natasha. I always forget about the damn Fearless Leader. So that's the main characters in the actual Rocky parts. And, you know, as we say, some of these voice actors, it's going to be a little bit of a who's who of voice acting legends, especially June Foray. And I never, ever, ever, ever knew that she was the voice of Rocky.
Neither did I.
I would, June Foray... Before I even got involved with Behind the Voice Actors, and even years before that, you know, before I even became interested in voice acting as just a general kind of history type thing, mm-hmm. You know, June Foray is one of the names that even I knew as just a casual fan, just from the Looney Tunes days as the granny and you know, stuff like that. But I never knew that she was the voice of Rocky. I even have to almost, like, go back and listen to it, like, really? That's not, like, really? That's, like, I can buy Natasha. She was Rocky, too. and Bill Scott was the voice of Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also a pretty famous voice actor. He did a couple characters on the Gummy Bears, a couple characters on the Wuzzles, and a few other things. Not, like, major things. I mean, Bullwinkle's probably one of his most famous roles. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm leaving a bunch of his roles out, but... You know, if you want to know his roles, you can obviously look it up.
Yeah, we provide no insight to other voice actors' roles on this show whatsoever, because Kevin's too lazy to go to his own website and look at the profile.
No, I just don't want people getting bored with me reading like lists of like dozens and dozens of stuff that they did. And one of my favorite all time, as far as this era voice actors, Paul Frees does Boris. I love Paul Frees. Him and he's like one of the trios of Pauls back in the day that did a bunch of stuff. And I'll bring this up just because you'll probably like it. I'll just name a couple. Besides being Toucan Sam on Fruit Loops, Poppin' Fresh from the Pillsbury Company on commercials, Sprout from the Green Giant, and Boo Berry from the cereal, he was also the voice of Ludwig von Drake from The Wonderful World of Disney, Morocco Mole from Secret Squirrel, Squiddly Diddly, and you'll like this last one, the voice of Carr from the 1982 Knight Rider show.
Yeah, I already knew that.
So, I love Paul
and I have to... I don't really want to talk bad about the guy. He is a very awesome voice actor. I'm sorry. Peter Cullen is the only voice for Carr. I did not like when they changed it to Paul Frees.
You didn't like that?
No. But that's just me. I mean, the guy is great. You know, like you said, he's a very great voice actor. He's voiced, you know, a lot of very iconic roles.
Right. And he's also he's been honored since after his death as a Disney legend.
Yeah.
So he's one of those guys. So and who's the other voice actor we haven't named for this part? The Fearless Leader was... I don't know who Fearless Leader was voiced by, actually. It was... Oh, Bill Scott was Fearless Leader as well as Bullwinkle.
Oh, okay.
So Bill Scott did both of those. And then the narrator for these segments was William Conrad. I'm not as familiar with him, I'll admit that. So that was your first kind of segment. I don't know if you want to talk about some of the other segments as far as like the Fractured Fairy Tales or Aesop and Son.
I remember Aesop and Son, and I remember it all, but the narrator is what really kind of stood out for me.
Yeah. Well, Aesop Jr. was a pretty famous voice.
Aesop Jr. Oh yeah, I didn't see him on the list. I'm like, okay, well, there's Aesop up there. Where the hell's his damn Junior? And it's like down on the bottom. I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, Dawes Butler. There we go.
Another famous actor that was involved with this, Julie Bennett as a female. I don't know exactly which voices she did, but she was involved in some of the shorts. And Hans Conried was Snidely Whiplash, and he's a pretty famous old school voice actor. He did Snidely Whiplash. He did Uncle Waldo Wigglesworth in The Adventures of Hoppity Hopper, and maybe most people would recognize him as Captain Hook from Peter Pan.
Yeah. A lot of really, you know, stellar cast, and I don't know how I don't know back in the day if they did ensemble casting, but it would have been...
It's a pretty big cast for back in the day.
Yeah, it would have been awesome to be a fly in the wall.
Oh yeah.
In this voice booth, just to see all these people together.
Yeah, and definitely to have this many people doing some of the main roles. I don't know if they... My guess is that they recorded different segments, obviously separately, so that way for the Rocky and Bullwinkle, all you really needed was June Foray, Paul Frees, you know, William Conrad. And for, you know, like Aesop and Son, you just needed Charles Ruggles and Dawes Butler and one other, you know, a couple other guys. So that's what I'm guessing they did. But, man, if they would have done them all together, that would have been quite the crew.
Yeah, that would have been so the crew.
And they also have some, well, as far as some of the characters that we've mentioned, you know, whether it be the Rocky characters or, you know, Aesop and Son, Fractured Fairy Tales, whatever it might be, do you have certain characters that you like more than others? My favorite character in Rocky and Bullwinkle, by far, is Rocky. I love Rocky. I love Bullwinkle's voice the most.
I love Bullwinkle when he's Mr. Know-It-All.
Yeah, he's definitely my favorite voice in the series, as far as not my favorite voice actor, necessarily, but my favorite character voice. I just love it, but Rocky is my favorite actual character. I like some of the other ones. We'll get to one of the other segments later that I'll tell you about one of the characters in that I really like. But as far as these main characters from Rocky and Bullwinkle, Rocky's my favorite. I don't know. I didn't really just have any feelings either good or bad for Natasha and Boris.
The only thing thing that I absolutely love about Boris and Natasha is the Russian.
Oh yeah,
the Russian accents.
Cool, we're going to even if they weren't great.
Squirrel.
I mean, they were intentionally not great. I'm not saying they weren't. They didn't do a good job with their voices. They were intentionally over the top.
And, oh yeah. You know,
obviously, trying to do that on purpose, but that's what kind of made it cool. So you don't have a favorite Rocky character?
Bullwinkle.
Okay.
You just said that.
When he was saying, well, I thought you were just saying you liked him when he was Mr. Intelligent. I didn't know you were saying that was your favorite character. I was just hoping you didn't say Scrappy.
Oh, wait a second. Scrappy's not even anywhere near this. Come on now.
I know. I was just throwing that out there. It will never die.
Oh, yes, it will. It died at the beginning of this episode.
I will bring it up sometime in the future. Maybe in 65 years in the future.
No, I mean, Bullwinkle is the character who always has good intentions, but always fumbles the ball at the 3-yard line.
Yeah.
He's technically a goofy.
Yeah, that's a good example. That's a good thing to call him or whatever. So that, does that mean that Rocky's Bugs Bunny or like Mickey Mouse or something like that?
He could be. No, seriously, he could
be. He reminds me more of Bugs Bunny than Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, though. Yeah. I don't know. He's not as, but well, he's not as mischievous as Bugs is, though.
But he's not as nice as Mickey is. Mickey's too nice. Anyway. Any other thoughts on the characters?
Not really.
Any that we didn't mention?
Not really.
All right.
I guess we can move on to the behind-the-scenes segment. Wow, Bill Scott did the producing on 12 episodes. Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Didn't know that.
And just someone that people may have heard of was another producer.
What, huh?
People might have maybe have heard of the other producer. I don't know.
Jay Ward. I don't know who the hell it is.
Jay Ward is one of the most famous cartoon people of all time.
If it doesn't say Bert or Fred Ward, I don't know who it is.
Really? You've never heard of Jay
no.
Ward? That makes me want to jump through my headset and slap you in the
Why?
Face.
Why?
Just because, like, Jay Ward is, like, iconic in, like, the animation business for just, like, everything he did.
I can hear you typing in the background.
I was clicking my mouse. I wasn't typing.
It was something to do with your mouse and keyboard, so you can't complain about me doing it either.
That's all right. I hear you all the time. No, he was the producer for Crusader Rabbit, producer for Rocky, producer for Hoppity Hopper, George of the Jungle, Dudley Do-Right, but... It was more than that. I think it was more like the people that kind of learned under him that went on to do other things was kind of where he gets his fame from. There's a lot of people that are like can trace their roots back to Jay Ward, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've, like I said, if it's not Bert or Fred, I don't know who it is.
Oh, goodness. I won't slap you then. I'll give you a pass on this one.
So as far as some background here, apparently the idea for the series was created by Jay Ward, as you said, and Alex Anderson, who had previously collaborated on Crusader Rabbit, and was based upon the original property, the Frostbite Falls Review. This original show never got past the proposal stage. It was about a group of forest animals running a TV station. The group included Rocket J. Squirrel, Osky Bear, Canadian Moose, which is Bullwinkle, Sylvester Fox, Blackstone Crow, and Floral Fauna. Oh, wow.
Those are two characters in, what is it, Cinderella?
No, Sleeping Beauty. I was going to say, wow, that's a horrible Disney pun right there. The show in this form was created by Jay Ward's partner, Alex Anderson. Bullwinkle's name came from a friend of Jay Ward's, Clarence Bullwinkle, who was a property owner and landlord in Berkeley, California. Ward wanted to produce the show in Los Angeles. However, Anderson lived in the San Francisco Bay Area and did not want to relocate. As a result, Ward hired Bill Scott, who became the head writer and co-producer at Jay Ward Productions, and who wrote all of the Rocky and Bullwinkle features. Ward was joined by writers Alan Burns, who later became head writer for MTM Enterprises, and Chris Hayward. Interesting.
And the production began basically in 1958, so... right before it went to air in 1959. So 8 months later, General Mills signed a deal to sponsor the cartoon under the condition that the show be run in a late afternoon time slot where it could be targeted towards children. So Ward hired most of the rest of his production staff, including writers and designers. However, no animators were hired since Ward was able to convince friends of his advertising agency that had General Mills as a client to buy an animation studio in Mexico called Gamma Productions. So this outsourcing of the animation for the series was basically financially, you know, attractive, but that kind of is why the animation is a little bit choppy at the time. I don't know if that's who did the final products or whatnot, but apparently they saved money in the animation department.
Well, you know, save money wherever you can, I guess.
Yeah, it says there was basically a lot of stuff that they found out at the beginning, a lot of mistakes as far as like mustaches popping on and off of Boris. Bullwinkle's antlers would change colors, costumes would disappear, so, whatever.
Yeah, and of course, there's a bunch of syndication packages that they did.
Yeah.
This
kind of goes into all the different parts that were aired under the title Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, or, you know, this or that.
Right.
And you named a couple of them.
Right, yeah. It's, let's see, Fractured Fairy Tales, Peabody's Improbable History, Dudley Do-Right of the Mounties, whatever. Aesop and Son, and short cartoons, including Bullwinkle's Corner, Mr. Know-It-All, sometimes out of original broadcast sequence, the final 20 syndicated Bullwinkle show episodes feature later Rocky and Bullwinkle storylines from Bumbling Brothers Circus through the end of the series. Minus Moosylvania.
And then another short that was sometimes seen under this title was Total Television's The World of Commander McBragg. So that was basically the different shorts that you might see if you were watching something under that title at the time. I guess we'll wait until the DVD section, but I don't know how this has been released in DVD, but we'll keep that in mind. I don't know if all the different shorts are separate or combined under that title or what.
I'm not sure either.
Which of these, it's kind of getting into the actual show a little bit, but which ones of those are your favorite as far as the segments that aired with Rocky?
Aesop and Son. The only thing I liked about Fractured Fairy Tales was the narrator. The fairy tales themselves, they were pretty fractured. I mean, it just didn't really catch on with me at all. And of course, Mr. Peabody's Improbable History. I like that as well.
Yeah, I my favorite's probably the World of Commander McBragg, and maybe that's just because I'm a history guru. But I just love the fact that he's like, it's basically this guy that sits in a chair and he tells his friend about these historic things, but he inserts himself into it. Like,
so it's like Transformers.
Well, not quite. Like, for example, he was talking about that he invented the airplane before the Wright brothers, and so he goes into what he was doing and how the Wright brothers got credit for it instead of him, or he'll put himself in the Wild West and, like, tell some far-off thing about it. And I just think I love his voice, and I just think it's clever ways to talk about history thing, even though it's, like, not accurate history, but it's kind of in the same vein as, Peabody's Improbable History, but I like Commander McBragg a little bit better.
See, I never really watched Commander McBragg, so I have no idea what the hell it is. Because the only ones I really remember are the ones that I mentioned. I mean, yeah. I barely remember Dudley Do-Right, but I remember seeing like maybe a half a second of that cartoon, but the rest
That's
of them...
That's a lot of it.
Huh?
That's a lot. A half a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind Fractured Fairy Tales. It's kind of like the same vein in, you know, whether they're taking history and, like, making some type of crazy new spin on it or fairy tales and doing it. I mean, that's kind of the stuff they were doing with a bunch of these different shorts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I don't mind Fractured Fairy Tales. Commander McBragg is probably my favorite. I don't know. I don't really remember Dudley Do-Right too much, and I don't remember Aesop and Son very much.
Aesop and Son is basically the father tells the son a story, or there's some situation that happens to the son. The father tells the son a story, and then at the end there's a moral.
Gotcha.
There's some sort of moral that the son learns.
So you just described every cartoon that's ever been made. No, I'm just kidding.
It's kind of like the Wheel of Morality, damn it.
Wow, a reference to episode what, one?
Two.
Two? Yes, folks.
Wheel of Morality, turn. Tell us a lesson that we should learn.
And if anyone doesn't get that reference, go run yourself into a wall. Literally, I'm not joking. And then watch episode two. Or listen.
I was going to say, it's not...
It. You can watch your screen as you listen to it.
Boy, you're really off tonight, dude.
Whatever.
All right,
I'm on top of my game.
Yeah, no, yeah, right.
As always.
So getting into the actual show, as far as the structure, when this was first shown on NBC, the cartoons were introduced by Bullwinkle Puppet, voiced by Bill Scott, who would often lampoon celebrities, current events, and especially Walt Disney. This program, Wonderful World of Color, was the next show on the schedule. On one occasion, Bullwinkle encouraged children to pull the turning knobs off the TV set. In that way, explained Bullwinkle, "We'll be sure to be with you next week."
Yikes.
Oh, boy.
And actually, the networks received complaints from parents about that, of an estimated 20,000 children viewers who apparently followed Bullwinkle's suggestion. So Bullwinkle told the children the following week to put the knobs back on with glue and make it stick.
Oh boy. The puppet sequence was dropped altogether. He did a segment called Dear Bullwinkle, where letters specially made for the show were read and answered humorously. Four episodes of Dear Bullwinkle are on the Season 1 DVD. Each episode is composed of two Rocky and Bullwinkle cliffhanger shorts that stylistically emulated early radio and film serials. The plots of these shorts would combine into story arcs spanning numerous episodes. The first and longest story arc was Jet Fuel Formula, consisting of 40 shorts, 20 episodes. Stories range from seeking the missing ingredient for the rocket fuel formula to tracking the monstrous whale, Maybe Dick. Oh boy. Oh boy. They got away with that back then.
That's what you could do back then.
There's no way that Maybe Dick would have been able to get away with something like that today, unless, you know, it was a Vivid Entertainment.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And wow.
And then towards the end of most episodes, the narrator would announce two humorous titles for the next episode that typically were puns of each other. For example, during an adventure taking place in a mountain range, the narrator would state, "Be with us next time for Avalanches Better Than None" or "Snows, Your Old Man." The narrator frequently had conversations with the characters, thus breaking the fourth wall. Dun dun dun. And there was different opening sequences. There was four different opening sequences for the cartoons.
Yep.
So you had a variety there.
Yeah, there was... I always remember the Rocky flying part. I think another one that I remember at the end is like... they pop up as flowers. Like, all these flowers pop up, and then the two of them pop up at the very end of it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm not really sure.
that's how the episodes ended.
Oh, the... the Sunfolk, that was the end of the episode. Okay, well, there, I don't have to read that paragraph.
See, you remember the beginnings and you remember the ends.
I don't remember the beginning. Rocky flying around. So, some of the supporting features: Dudley Do-Right of the Mounties, Nobody Cares. See, The World of Commander McBragg. Short features on revolutionists in history as the title character. Would have imagined it. Well, I guess you can talk about that a little bit if you want.
Well, I mean, we kind of mentioned all of these. I mean, you know, that's the one where the guys are retelling the histories, basically. So, you know, we've talked about each one of these. I don't know, and I think we got them all. Rocky and Bullwinkle's fan club, we didn't talk about. That was a series of attempts by Rocky and Bullwinkle to conduct the club's business. It consisted of Rocky, Bullwinkle, Boris, Natasha, and Captain Peter Peach Fuzz. These shorts showed these characters out of their regular character. And then, like you had said before, you liked Bullwinkle when he was playing Mr. Know-It-All. So that was another thing that, another kind of segment that they threw in there along with all the other ones that we kind of already talked about.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I remember one other thing. The Wayback Machine, time machine used by Mr. Peabody and Sherman to witness or participate in more often than not the famous events from history.
Yeah.
So the Wayback Machine, that's something that's kind of lived on. That,
that the Wayback Machine is kind of like, well, because I watched a few episodes of Peabody and Sherman today, and kind of reminds me of a Immobile DeLorean.
Uh-oh. But I just don't think it's interesting that that's kind of where that term, if that's where that term comes from, as far as, because people use that all the time in different things. You know, they're always like, oh, we're in the Wayback Machine talking about stuff from the, you
know, 80s. That could be it. That could be it.
So, interesting. You learn something new every day, dang
it. I think we're going to hear some of the other little theme songs, and we will be back with the Legacy segment. So the music segment here, the original music was done by Dennis Farnon. I couldn't tell if it was an R, an N, or an M. Fred Steiner and George Steiner as well. What do you think of the theme to the show, just like the Rocky and Bullwinkle music?
It's all right. It's never something that I get excited about. It's not necessarily something that, like, I don't know. To me, it's not as memorable as a lot of other themes I've heard. It's good. It's, you know, it's entertaining to a point, but it's just not one of my necessarily favorite ones.
I think it's one of those themes that you have to actually be watching the show.
Yeah.
To really get into it.
Yeah, you need a, you need something to be visually stimulated with too, because it's not going to live alone just on the music. I think it doesn't stand alone very well. Oh. Compared to some themes, I mean, like, you could hear some themes, like Scooby-Doo, you can hear that theme, and it doesn't matter what you're watching, or if you're not watching anything, you can still hear it and kind of get into it and understand it. The Rocky music, you almost need to be watching something.
Oh, yes, very much so. Getting into the Legacy segment, do we want to talk about some cultural impact here?
Well, I mean, just a couple things that I would mention. It has aired in over 100 countries, so that kind of just points to how much... of a success, I guess it was, if you want to call it that, you know, as far as being able to be internationally shown, and if it wasn't successful, it wouldn't have done that. There's been, you know, different stuff as far as, like, games and memorabilia, obviously. And, of course, there is one thing that I guess we have to mention.
The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle?
No, in our friends at the website.
Oh, yeah, where is it?
It's the last one under Reception and Cultural Impact.
Okay, let's see.
And the only reason I'm not reading it is because I'm making Mike, because I don't want to give them any credit.
I should just make you do it anyway.
Nah. Although I will give it credit for where it did rank it.
Yeah, those bastards over at IGN actually ranked the show fairly well. Rocky and Bullwinkle came in at number 11.
In the top 100. Of their
January 2009. And see, that's the thing, though. They need to go back and do that list over again.
Or just have other people do it for them. How about actually people that watched cartoons that aired before? I mean, I know this is an old cartoon, which they put it in only because, oh, Rockin' Bullwinkle, that's a famous name. The people that made those lists, I'm convinced that they didn't watch – they were all born in, like, 1990. they didn't watch anything before 1990. And so if it wasn't really famous and they hadn't heard of it, it didn't make the list. I mean, what was the other one that didn't make – what was one that didn't even make the list? Flintstones or something like that? Something bizarre didn't make the list.
I know Pink Panther didn't make the list.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it was a terrible list. We've been over this.
So anyways, there were several attempts to revive Rocky and Bullwinkle throughout the 1970s. A revival in 1981 parodied the Super Bowl. A script was written, storyboards were produced, and the network gave it a green light. But the project was canceled on account of the objections from the NFL. Actual team owners were parodied, and Boris was fixing the game.
I guess that was not looked upon very, very nicely.
As far as some in other media here, Boris and Natasha, a live-action film... starring the two spies was produced in 1992. Neither Rocky nor Bullwinkle appear in this film. I have never seen this.
That's probably why. And then, of course, Natasha film with no Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah. And then, of course, The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, a theatrical film starring Rocky and Bullwinkle, was released in 2000. It was mostly live action, with Rocky and Bullwinkle appearing as computer-generated characters for the film. June Foray returned to voice Rocky, while Bullwinkle was voiced by Keith Scott. Bill Scott's son, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know. Not familiar with him. The movie retained the spirit and feel of the original cartoons, but most critics did not think the film was as humorous as the original. But I do think it was cool that they got June Foray to come back and do the voice of Rocky. I don't know. Did Natasha and Boris? I have not seen this. Did Natasha and Boris appear in this as well?
You've never seen this?
No, I don't watch movies. I don't watch animated movies that came out after 1992.
This is not animated. This is like Looney Tunes Back in Action or Space Jam.
Oh well, I really don't watch those either. I'm just kidding.
You've never seriously. You've never seen this?
No. Just answer my damn question. Did Boris and Natasha show up in it?
Hold on. Piper Perabo played Karen Sympathy.
Oh, God.
Boris was played by Robert De Niro.
Oh, I do remember seeing previews for it.
Natasha was played by Rene Russo.
Ah, gotcha. I do remember seeing the, Keith Scott was a longtime friend of Bill Scott, but there was no relation.
Oh, okay.
That's how good I am. Tell me, I'm not on top of my game, damn it. So, was this a good movie or not?
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen it. It was nice to see, you know, Boris and Natasha as actual humans. And, of course, you really can't have actual animals as Rocky and Bullwinkle, so you had to have CGI. I don't know, I'd probably give it like a generous 5 out of 10, maybe.
Gotcha. And there has been attempts to make films of the segments that appeared in the Rocky and Bullwinkle show.
Oh, God, yeah. Dudley Do-Right, a theatrical live-action film, was released in 1999 and starred Brendan Fraser and Sarah Jessica Parker.
Oh. And apparently there's one in the works for Peabody's Improbable History. It was originally canceled, but now DreamWorks is behind it, so we'll see.
Right, and I know nothing about the recordings, so I don't know.
Yeah, there's records about it. Because it was an old cartoon, there was records about it. Right. And there's been a couple video games about it.
Yeah, there's been a couple of video games. Getting to the DVD releases, in 2002, Jay Ward Productions established a partnership with Classic Media called the Bullwinkle Studios. In 2003 and 2004, the partnership produced DVDs of the first two seasons of the series, which were renamed for legal reasons Rocky and Bullwinkle and Friends. These sets were followed by Season 3 in September 2005 and Season 4 nearly 5 years later in August 2010. According to a pamphlet accompanying the DVDs for the first season, the DVDs use second season opening, which Ward's daughter Tiffany says was her father's favorite. However, the DVDs for the third and fourth seasons used the opening and closing from the first season. The DVDs for the first two seasons replaced the original music with themes Ward produced for the third season.
Just wait 5 more seconds, your head will explode as soon as it's done spinning.
The DVD is released. Okay, yeah. Ow. Boom.
It happened. So they're all fucked up.
The DVD releases of the shows differ from the originals. The remaining of the show to Rocky and Bullwinkle and Friends led to sometimes clumsy superimposition of new title onto pre-existing opening credits and interior bumpers. A Bill Conrad impersonator was used to announce the new title, which viewers found jarring. Semi-transparent R&B logo appears for 5 seconds at the beginning of each segment. Some segments were moved from their placement in the original episodes.
So in other words, it sounds like the DVDs that have been released for this are all screwed up.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the content is bad, but everything else about it is mixed up, rearranged, and screwed up.
Let's see. In 2005, Bullwinkle Studios released a series of Best Of DVD compilations of popular segments of the series, 2 volumes of The Best of Rocky and Bullwinkle, plus the single volume The Best of Boris and Natasha, The Best of Mr. Peabody and Sherman, and The Best of Dudley Do-Right. These compilations contain episodes from the entire run of the show, including the otherwise unreleased Season 5. On January 4th, 2011, Classic Media will release Rocky and Bullwinkle and Friends, the complete series on DVD in Region 1.
Yeah. Maybe that won't be as screwed up.
I don't know.
So it's coming in a few months. You can buy everything.
Yes.
Together, and hopefully it's not expensive and not rearranged.
Yeah. Now, there is one thing that I hope that Classic Media does. I hope that they port over the special features because... for season 1, you have a 16-page booklet detailing the origins and popularity of the characters. Never-before-seen Bullwinkle puppet segments. Rarely-seen U.S. Savings Stamp Club episode. Vintage Rocky and Bullwinkle TV spots. Sneak peek at complete season 2, which is kind of stupid. But and in season 2, you have classic Bullwinkle TV commercials. A interview with June Foray. That would be very interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
Sneak peek at complete season 3. Moose Calls, The Best of Bullwinkle Sings.
Oh, God.
Season 3, you had live Bullwinkle puppet clips, Best of Bullwinkle Follies, and a sneak peek at season 4. And then season 4 had no bonus features.
They apparently were running out of money or got lazy.
Or they just ran out of features in general.
They ran out of ideas. They're not very creative.
Yeah.
So I will withhold judgment and wait and see what the new release is going to be in January.
Yep.
Before I even consider buying these, and it would have to be a darn good price.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? So. All right, so we are going to go to some advertisements, and we'll be back with the outro.
Dreamcast will be back after these messages.
I go Coco the Coco Puffs while listening to Dreamcast.
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Dreamcast.
Over at geekcastradio.com, and I want you to listen to it because it's the world's first Beast Wars and Beast Machines review podcast. If you don't listen to it, I will send my vehicles to remove your sparks and destroy you. So, from now on, you will listen and tune into the Beast Unleashed.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Dreamcast coming this week.
Now back to Dreamcast.
So, final thoughts on Rocky and Bullwinkle.
To me, Rocky and Bullwinkle holds kind of a special place as far as the history of cartoons goes. You know, I liked it. I definitely watched it when I was a kid. I still enjoyed watching it, you know, in preparation for this. I love the characters of Rocky and Bullwinkle. Like I said, I love one of their character. I love the other voice. But I think if you were like to, if you were forced to write down like certain cartoons that had a major impact on, you know, animation and cartoon, you know, history, this would be one of them that I would put down. I just think it did a lot for the cartoon industry. And like I said, a lot of people kind of came from this and did other stuff in the decades, you know, that came right after it. So thumbs up to Rocky and Bullwinkle for me.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, they're just the classic team up, and it's just, it's so funny. And, you know, you can like the characters for different reasons, but I don't know, I just found Bull, because Rocky is essentially the straight guy.
Yeah.
As far as the comedy goes, he has to play it straight, whereas Bullwinkle, he's the wacky one. And, yeah, I guess I like the wacky one a little bit better.
We wonder why.
Shut up. Oh, crap. I'm losing my mind.
Oh, you darn long. You went and lost your mind a long time ago, son.
Whatever. Let's see. Have we mentioned anything about a certain thing that's premiering next, or that actually already premiered, or whatever?
Nah, we can leave that a mystery.
Go over to geekcastradio.com and look for TV shows. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, look for cool stuff that's coming, or has some of it has already come.
Ooh, that's.
But much of it is still to come. Get your mind out of the gutter.
That's a hell of a mess to clean up there.
Oh, God. Anyways, go to Geekcast Radio and look for new stuff.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are some ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on each episode post. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTuneCast. Mine is TFG. And Mike, what is your Twitter?
BossKDAWG.
Become a fan on Facebook, facebook.com/GeekcastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving a message for and your name, 502-526-5821.
And just randomly call in and tell Mike that I'm right and he's wrong. Not even, you don't even need a topic. Just tell him he's wrong.
That's not working. That's not happening. No way.
Because I can delete that message.
This is highly professional stuff we're doing right now.
Anyways, so we hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast. I wish you'll join us next time when we'll be reminiscing on Dungeons & Dragons with special guest Michael Wilson from the Beast Unleashed podcast.
Yay!
For now, I am TFG on Mike with
Optimus Solo from BehindTheVoiceActors.com.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Hey, look! A Dungeons & Dragons ride!
Give me a break.
I don't like this.
Whoa!
What's happening?
Whoa!
Where are we? Look out!
Fear not, ranger. Barbarian, magician, thief. Cavalier and acrobat. That was Venger, the force of evil. I am Dungeon Master, your guide in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.